둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I wore a particularly ugly t-shirt for you today, so.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence. And the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the series. Of course, you know what to do, right? If you like what you see, what you hear, hit that subscribe button. I put out 3 new interviews every single week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists, discover those new ones, all the usual places, including Spotify and Apple Podcast at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Some of my recent guests have included the director of the Hunger Games prequel, Francis Lawrence. I had Neil deGrasse Tyson on here, Dolly Parton, Rufus Wainwright, Gavin Rozdell of Bush, Johnny Marr of the Smiths, Art Alexakis from Everclear, Paul Rogers of Bad Company. We talked with The Kills, Japanese House, Brandon Flowers of The Killers, and the folks behind shows like Lessons in Chemistry and Pain Hustlers. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. In fact, speaking of subscribing, also this month, we're sort of on a mission, right? We want to spread the word about the podcast, about Kyle Meredith With, as far as we can get it out there. And you, as it turns out, are our secret weapon. If you love this series, really, as much as we love bringing it to you, we need you to hop over to Apple Podcasts. Hit the follow button over there. Leave us a review. Not only is it a really quick, easy way to show your support, but it'll also give you a chance to win some exclusive Consequence merch. You just head to the link in the show notes, submit your info along with a screenshot of your review. So again, head to the link in the show notes, submit your info along with a screenshot of your review that you've left about this series on Apple Podcasts. We'll be shouting out our winners in December, so make sure to follow and review soon. And thanks for all your support in helping the Kyle Meredith With podcast grow. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, I'm so excited to have him back on the show, Mike Mills, of one of my all-time favorite bands, R.E.M. We're going to be talking about the 25th anniversary of their album Up. This is an album that means a whole lot to me. I was, you know, in my junior, senior year of high school when it came out. Those are really formative years for us, right? And I'd been an R.E.M. fan for the entire decade, but there was something about this record. There was a lot of old R.E.M. fans that got turned off because it was an electronic record. This was their first album that they did after drummer Bill Berry had left the band. They had already been planning on making an electronic record, but it did push it more in that direction. But the lyrics, the sound, I was all in. And as I joke with Mike, I've waited 25 years, basically, to do this interview right here. So we're going to talk about the difficult circumstances in which the LP was created, how they found the sound, and we'll hear some stories behind songs Airport Man, Sad Professor, Day Sleeper, and Hope. Mike's also going to talk about why they decided not to include the demos on this deluxe package. They've done that in the past, while also confirming, as he says, there are plenty of unheard songs in the REM vault. We're also going to chat about the band's recent resurgence in the popular zeitgeist. From the covers like Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees just put out, as well as Soccer Mommy, as well as the use of their music on the TV series The Bear. And we get a little known story about having to remix their debut album Murmur after their first record label tried to make sure it had that 80s sound at the time. That was all in vogue. All that and more, we're talking the 25th anniversary edition of Up. It's Kyle Meredith with REM's Mike Mills.
Hello there. Man, three a week. That's hard work.
Yeah, it's, you know, and all the rest of them are just me biding my time to get back around to when you guys have another anniversary coming up so I can do another REM interview. So
thank you.
This time we get to talk about a little record called Up. Came out in 1998. It is my favorite REM record.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. And now whether it's the best REM record, I think that's a different thing, you know, whatever that means, but it's my favorite. It's the one that means the most to me. It's an album that doesn't get talked about enough, and probably an album that when it does get talked about, I always feel is a misunderstood record. And I don't know, you know, so there's a new deluxe edition. It's got this great live album that goes along with it from the Party of Five show. But just kind of going back there, before I get too deep in it, you know, I don't want to project too much. So I just want to kind of open it up to you. 25 years later, for all this record was, what does it mean to you?
Well, it's kind of a powerful record in terms of memory, because it was made under such difficult circumstances. You know, the story's told and known that Bill had left the band, and you know, we were already leaning towards making a more electronic, machine-driven record. Obviously, Bill's leaving accelerated that process. But, you know, it was a record. Most bands would have been smart and taken a little time off and, you know, regathered themselves and determined how they were feeling after losing a member. But we were a stubborn bunch, and we said, you know, we've already started this record. We got demos. We got songs we like. Let's just do it. And so we made a really remarkable record under remarkably difficult circumstances, especially considering that what we decided to do was throw out all the rules that we had. Any previous guidelines or restrictions that we put on ourselves all went out the window. So it was liberating in that sense, but it was also terrifying in the sense that we didn't have anything to really fall back on. It was just it was kind of like a high wire without a net. So I'm really proud of it. And I thought that because of that, because there were so few bedrock foundations to stand on, it became even more interesting because it's so different than anything we did before.
And that's what stood out to me. I mean, you know, because of my age, I mean, I remember coming around with Automatic and Monster meaning a lot. That opened a lot of doors for me. And New Adventures was great, too. And we got to talk about that last time. When this hit, there was something in the air. There was something in the air that people were doing. Radiohead was doing it a little bit, you know, and some other bands with electronics. You guys did it in a very different way because there was this very organic sound to these electronics. In fact, when I listen to it now, what really stands out to me is this 60s vibe. And I was thinking, you know, when you have the younger generations come around and they're like, oh, we're discovering our own 90s. I always think that they forget about that there was this version of the 90s where you all were kind of looking back at the 60s. Like there's a little go-go in there every now and then, you know, there's some of that stuff. Like where did that, I mean, it may have just been the stuff you grew up on, but did you know that sound was there when you were doing it?
You know, we didn't know what was there when we were doing it. We were just winging it. But I will say this one thing about that record and about REM songs in general, there is usually one guy with a guitar or one guy with a piano at the core of most of them. So even though these songs are very, you know, electrified or mechanized or however you wish to describe it, there's still a real organic song at the core of almost all of it. And that makes a difference. It's not like we just started making noises with machines and you know, came out with these series of sounds. They are real songs underneath all of that. So I think that that makes a difference and gives it a stability. What little stability it has comes from that. And the organic, what organic feel it has also comes from the fact that there is a song, a really basic, simple song underneath all of it.
Now, does that go for the same with Airport Man? Because what a flex that was.
No, Airport Man is I don't know what Airport Man is. It's kind of a, it's like a dream sequence to me. It's like a person in a daze. It's like when you've been through too many airports, you know, and you're wandering through this airport and you're like, which airport am I in? Why am I here? Where am I going? Where have I been? I don't know any of these things. So, you know, and it's such an odd song for REM. And we were in such a weird contrarian mood with everything we'd been through at that point. I said, why don't we just start the record with the weirdest song we've ever made? And our feeling was, okay, here's the new REM. This is not like the old REM. If you can appreciate this song, then you'll really like everything else. You know, it's kind of like, welcome to the new world. Here's the gateway through which you have to pass to get to it. And so we put it up there first just to let people know kind of what was coming.
We got to talk about it in our last interview with you and Michael, but that's a song I frequently hum. I find it so comforting to hum that song, which is about all you can do with a song like that, too, is just kind of hum along.
You know, it is oddly soothing in a way, except for the weird bah, 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 the weird noise that comes in there. But otherwise, it's dreamy, which I kind of dig about it.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Mike Mills of REM. I feel like the other side of that in the context that we're talking is Day Sleeper, which ends up being the first hit, which I find one of the most magical songs that I love to listen to. Like, you know, some songs have magic in it, but when you talk about what you're talking in that, it's dreamy. And then you have a song called Day Sleeper, you know, I mean, and the airports, and then you have that video of, you know, the offices and all that, like, it seems like if you can define it at all, that might be one of those things you look back on, because usually when you write a song and maybe a little bit falls on Stipe's shoulders because he's putting the lyrics to it, but you don't know what you're writing about until much later. And then you go, oh, look, there was a theme. There was something happening there.
Right.
You know,
right.
Does that serve true for that?
Well, for that song, you know, I don't know. I think when we write the music, we usually have no idea what Michael's going to do with it. So, you know, there are a lot of songs we wrote that I thought would be these like supremely pop things that turned out to be not pop at all, and yet were probably better songs for it. And that's fine. You know, that was a lot of fun for us, was to write a song and give it to Michael and have no idea what, if anything, he would come back with. I think Day Sleeper holds together really well because it was one of the first songs that we recorded before things started getting really weird in terms of, you know, the balance of the band and recording schedules and, you know, who shows up early, who shows up late, that kind of thing. And that's when it all got a little crazy, which I think leads to a lot of the craziness on the record, which is all fine. But Airport Man, I mean, excuse me, Day Sleeper is a little more cohesive simply because we hadn't fragmented at that point that like we happened to later.
Was one of those other instances you were talking about not knowing, you know, thinking it was going to be one thing and it was the other, was the Sad Professor fall into that? Because when I go back and I was watching the documentary, This Way Up or something, whatever it's called. And there you are, and you're playing the guitar and you guys are writing it. And then Michael says he writes what ends up being the saddest song that he's ever written.
I thought there was a sad sweetness to it when I wrote it. And I thought Michael would pick up on that. I mean, you know, like I said, he can take songs in different directions, but I don't know where you're going to take that other than to sort of be kind of sad and sweet. There's only so many places you can go with that kind of song. I love it. It's one of my favorite songs that we ever did, really. I think, you know, Michael broke, talking about breaking the rules. Well, Michael broke one of the main ones, which is that you don't break up sentences over you just don't break them up like he did. It's very disjointed, which is kind of like maybe the thinking of an alcoholic professor might be. But you really sort of have to pay attention to it to find out which words are connected and which ones aren't. So, I just think it's a beautiful song, and it's really sad, but I really like it.
While we're talking about songs, the one I probably hit the most is Hope. I don't know why I'm drawn to that song. I know there was a little melody line there with Leonard Cohen, and maybe that's why. But that's the one I've always wanted to add in just a general term to what we're talking about. Like, where did that song come from? Because, again, this is a complete electronic thing that's happening here.
You know, I was trying to remember what the genesis of that song was the other day, and I'm not sure I know. I'm sure Peter had something to do with it because, anything that I didn't come up with, most of the time it was Peter. So, but I don't remember what that was before it turned into what it is, if that makes any sense. It was always going to be it's a Pat McCarthy song as much as anything else. It was always going to be a very heavily electronified and mechanized song. And so we really, in a big way, turned that one over to Pat. So a lot of what you hear that isn't Michael is Pat McCarthy.
It's a cool track. And those, and you know, I could keep going on there too, because, you know, Lotus being one of those, it's kind of like that, you know, just bizarre, cool stuff that's happening. But then, you know, okay, fast forward 25 years and we get this box. And I was thinking about the way you guys have been doing these deluxe editions, because a lot of times they collect B-sides, live cuts and everything. This one doesn't quite seem like it. Like, there are songs. What did I write? The emphysema and surfing the Ganges. Like, those aren't part of it. Like, when you all talk about doing these deluxe editions, I think for the fans, we're like, oh, what's going to be on here that we haven't heard? This one doesn't exactly get that. What was the conversation about this one?
I'll be honest with you. It wasn't my idea. I like putting the demos on there, but it seemed like this was such a departure record for us that just continuing to put out demos and outtakes and things, it just seemed a little out of character with this record. This record, because we had thrown out literally every rule we had when we made it, when we put it out, you know, we printed the lyrics, we just said there are no rules. So the other rules we broke were, well, we're not going to fill it up with outtakes and demos. We're going to give something completely different to maybe our most different records. So we put in keeping with the bizarre nature of it, it's us on Party of Five. I mean, there's not too much weirder than that. So we just added the live show. And also there's an odd juxtaposition of putting a live show with our least live record. It gives it a little humanity, a little organic feel that might not have been there if we just put out a bunch of demos.
It's nice hearing the live stuff, because we didn't get to experience that in that way at the time.
Not for a little bit later, but those songs, like all of our songs, like I said, there's a song at the core of everything, which means that you can somehow reproduce it live one way or another.
Are there vault songs in that way? I mean, you know, in another 20 years, do we get to turn around and be like, okay, now we're going to start releasing all the songs you haven't, like, do those even exist?
Oh, yeah, there's still plenty of stuff lying around. But, you know, there's a reason you haven't heard most of it. You know, I mean, I know as a fan, I'm always curious about outtakes and demos and things like that. But you have to decide if it enhances the knowledge of a song or if it diminishes it. And, you know, especially for the singers, Michael in particular, but even, you know, Bill and I trying to find parts in the background. It's like laws and sausages. You don't always want to see how they're made.
I know, you know, that's, of course, yeah, right. I know, as the artist, that's how you feel, and that's how most artists feel about their work. And then you turn around, the Beatles are like, okay, you get everything. You get everything, everything. You get all the chatter in between, you get everything. And we're like, yeah, give us more still. We don't want
Well, you know, they were funny. You know, they have those accents. Of course you want to hear them talk. I don't think we recorded a lot of chatter, so it's not like we're ever going to have the great experience that is the Love Show in Las Vegas, which I absolutely adore. I've seen it at least twice, if not three times. You know, that's a beautiful thing, and I'm so glad they captured all that stuff for us to listen to later. And you know, yes, there are a couple of really cool demos from this record. Suspicion is on this record, right? Peter's demo of Suspicion is actually better than what's on the record, but it's got some things wrong with it that meant we couldn't use it. So, you know, that may see the light of day someday. It's even more atmospheric and beautiful than the one on the record. But who knows? Someday that'll probably find its way out.
Yeah, I mean, just one of those. I mean, there are bands. Pearl Jam comes to mind, The Lost Dogs. It was like, okay, we're not going to put these on an anniversary edition. We're just going to compile them all onto its own little album.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that before. We put out Eponymous, which was a collection of Lunacy and B-sides. And, you know, we don't have a problem doing that. But, you know, this wasn't the time.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Mike Mills of REM.
Well, in the meantime, you've got other folks waving the flag for you. The Mickey Dolenz EP and Soccer Mommy also covering you guys on her new EP. Like, this feels like a nice time. Like, there's something, it's all coming together for REM.
Well, if you last long enough, you can become cool again. You know, the thing is, you have to last long enough to become uncool, which we successfully did. And then if you continue to be in the ether, you'll become cool again. I noticed it when they started. I don't watch those, you know, The Voice and America's Got Talent. I don't really watch them. But I know that people started covering REM songs. You know, people were playing Everybody Hurts and a few other things. And I said, OK, that's it. We're on the way back. But, you know, you just got the feel that we were being rediscovered by a new generation of people who didn't know the baggage of us becoming uncool, of us, you know, the downward career arc, which happens to everyone. You know, a lot of people weren't familiar with that. We didn't have any baggage. So they said, oh, this is a cool song. I'll sing that. And that is kind of nice to see that having stuck around this long, people are rediscovering our stuff. And we're validated in the sense that when we made these records, one of our only overriding ethical ideas was that it be timeless. We really didn't want any record to have so much of the sound of the day that it sounded dated when you played it later. In fact, we had one of our only real problems with IRS was when we made Murmur. And they told, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. They told Mitch and Don to update that snare sound and do these other things that made it contemporary early 80s. And Peter and I heard it and said, what the fuck are you doing? This is unacceptable. So we had to go back and remix a lot of it to get that 80s sound out of it. Even now, when I listen to Radio for Europe, that snare sound bugs me because it's still got too much of that 80s feel. But my point is that, you know, because we wanted to make these records timeless, I think that's why they hold up now for people who hadn't heard them 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's been fun too. The one thing I didn't mention was, of course, The Bear bringing back Strange Currencies, which, you know, fucking amazing song right there. I'm so happy it sort of got its moment in the sun. Did you all see that coming? I mean, that's got to be one of those moments that has to be a little bit of a surprise.
Well, it was a big surprise. You know, we've had lots of people asking us to use our songs over the years, and we almost always say yes. What's gratifying about this is that it's such an awesome show. It is such a great show. It's so well done. And the use of our music in it and other people's music is so spot on. Those guys really know what they're doing, and their love of both their craft and their art and the music that they apply to that is clear. And so that's what makes it work so well. And I'm thrilled that they chose to use our stuff as much as they have, and that it's such a great show. I haven't seen season two yet, but I understand that it's even more harrowing than season one, but also great.
You're in for something. You are. And it's renewed for the third season. So hopefully there'll be much more from you guys. And that's an easy way to wrap this up by saying what's next. You were just here in Louisville with the Baseball Project. Great to have you back in town as usual, but what happens next for you?
What is next? I leave tomorrow to head to Spain for a few big star shows. And really that's it. You know, the concerto thing that I wrote has several different, you know, we won an Emmy, by the way. I'm going to put that out there.
Congratulations.
A Night of Georgia Music, which is a part of the, it's one of the iterations of the concerto. It's a regional Emmy, but hey, it weighs the same as the other Emmy. So, you know, so I have a lot of concerto stuff going on. But really, it's been a busy year trying to keep next year a little bit more open, but we'll see what happens.
Mike, it's always such a pleasure to catch up with you. I really do mean that. 25th anniversary edition of Up. I've waited 25 years to get to this point. So, and I can't wait for the anniversary of reveal next. So that's still on the way.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm actually looking forward to that too.
Yeah, man. It's great talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Same to you, Kyle. Thank you.
My thanks to Mike Mills. The 25th anniversary edition of Up is out now. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button again so you can keep up with the entire interview series. At three new interviews sent your way every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at any of the places you care to subscribe to. But as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, if you head over to Apple Podcasts and follow there and leave us a review, you can win some cool exclusive Consequence merchandise. And again, what you do is you head to Apple Podcasts, you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast, you leave us a review, then you head to the link in the show notes of this one right here and submit that info along with a screenshot of your review. And you could be winning some stuff, again, over at Apple Podcasts. After you do all of that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of favorites from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. We get the best in new music. There's bonus interviews. One of my recent episodes had the music of Jewel, Sarah Vaughan, My Morning Jacket, The Ramones, Elvis Costello, Bob Mould, St. Vincent, The Shins, Jimi Hendrix, David Bowie, The Cranberries, Jack White, The Afghan Whigs, Queens of the Stone Age, The Bengals, Groove Armada, Peter Gabriel, U2, Grateful Dead, 10,000 Maniacs, Tom Waits, and my interview with Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses. Just an example of what you get every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also catch me on the social media sites. The address is always the same, at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I didn't know it was video. I don't think I look very good, but that's probably not any better.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.